across the orchard in the bright sunshine. Hey ho, it makes you feel so free, standing in the top of an apple tree.
Oh, that's the song Apple Pickers, Real. And it was written back in 1966, Jeff Robbins tells me, by Larry Hanks, who worked picking apples in the 60s in California. And our guest probably knows that song, Dan Bussey. Do you know that song, Dan?
I have heard it. I have heard it.
Dan knows a lot about apples, too, and that's why he's with us today. He has written a 7-volume book on heirloom apples, and the official title is The Illustrated History of Apples in the United States and Canada. Yeah. How many?
Well, in the book is about 16,350 distinct varieties.
16,000, and some beautiful photos.
Yes, the USDA commissioned watercolor artists back years ago to paint pictures of apples because that was the only way that they could probably get a lifelike rendition of them to compare with stuff that people were sending them constantly.
We're going to talk a bit about this book, but really zero in on apples today. And I think there's very little that Dan doesn't know about apples. Oh,
you might be surprised.
And growing them. And you may have all kinds of questions for him. Could be anything from growing apples to, you know, problems with them. But then just questions about heirloom apples. And your history, I really do want to get into how you got so involved in this, because I think it's such a great story. Here you are, a guy from Edgerton, Wisconsin.
Yep.
And you grew up amidst an apple orchard, if I'm not mistaken.
The old family farm orchard. Right? My dad put a house right in the middle of it, so I was always surrounded by the old trees. I wish I knew what most of them were, but, you know, when I was a little kid, it didn't interest me all that much. You know, I could grab a couple of green apples and bounce one or two off my brother's head when he wasn't looking. that was about as interesting as it got. But later on, I realized that I grew up with these wonderful heirlooms around me, and I had no idea what they were, and I needed to know. What were those?
And how did you go about doing that?
Well, I guess it came down to the point where I was getting married, and I bought a little bit of land, and I was going to plant fruit trees. And I just happened to be reading through the old Blair and Ketchum's Country Journal magazine, I think in 1979, and it had a book review in it for a book called Apples and Man. It was written by Fred Lape. Lape was the director of the George Landis Arboretum in Esperance, New York, and it's just a little book, but it talked about all the old varieties that we used to know and were very popular in this country years ago, and we've forgotten about them. We've moved on to newer and supposedly better things, but the old ones still had a charm and a taste that is superb and is worth looking into, and it got me hooked. The names especially are what really got me interested. All the sheep nose and cow snout and cat's head and white astrakhan and all those names. Like, what is that? What's that? What's about that?
And the story behind those had to be, so you looked into not only the...
I looked, yes. And that's the fun of it, is looking at the stories, not just the apples, but the stories behind them, the stories with the people that these apples originated from. And that's been really fascinating. I will be doing this the rest of my entire life at this point.
Well, you've been at it for a while. I mean, you've been at it for what?
Basically since the late 70s. So I started probably, 79 is when I really got interested in apples, and I started looking for old books on apples, and I would come up to the university up here at the Steenbach Library, because I remember doing study halls when I was a student here, and I remember there were old books on apples, and I thought, okay, here's a place to go look. And for over 15 years, I'd grab a grocery sack full of old horticultural manuals and take them home and scan through it. And I did that for years and compiled it. I bought a 286 computer to try to keep track of all of this, which I guess had about a 40 megabyte hard drive. I think my smartwatch has probably got more memory than that does.
Oh, but you kept using that computer. And
yeah.
And so it's not only just finding every apple.
No. It, you know, you learn the history of fruit culture in this country and wonderful stories of American history along the way. I think that's the fascinating part to me.
It would be to me, too. Michael in Madison, we'll give you a chance. Hi. Thank you, Michael.
Hi, Larry. I want to thank you for the programs that you air. I listen to them quite regularly. And I want to thank the guest for the discussion and all the research he's done on heirloom apples. I'm just calling to kind of make a statement for the other listeners that there are heirloom apples out there, which we all the listeners are aware of, at least now. Many of us have also heard of heirloom tomatoes, which is pretty much the only type of tomato that I eat. They're kind of malformed sometimes and kind of ugly, but they have incredible flavor.
Good for you.
But there are two other there are two other products that are not well recognized yet. There's heirloom corn. So, again, it grows shorter. The ears are smaller, but the taste is fabulous. And there's a local company that makes a tortilla chip out of heirloom corn, and it's absolutely dynamite. It's different than anything else that you can buy off the grocery shelf. And there's also heirloom pork, believe it or not. There are some farmers who raise these old varieties of pigs, which grow very slow and they're very small, you know, which is not favorable to the modern hog farmer because they want a pig that grows fast and grows to be super huge because they make more profit that way. But the heirloom pork also is completely different than any type of regular pork that you can find on the shelf. So I just want to highlight that to all the listeners, and I'm welcoming all the heirloom products because they truly offer more unique flavor than some of the more traditional stuff that you find in the grocery shelf.
And Michael, you're going to have to, those chips, you're going to have to give us the name of that company because we're going to get questions.
Okay. Well, so here's the problem. I'm kind of older and my memory is not what it used to be. But I don't actually remember the name of the chip, but I can tell you where you can buy them if that's okay and doesn't violate any program rules.
All right. Where can you buy them?
At the Vitruvian Farm Outlet in Stoughton.
Oh, okay. Well, Stoughton. That's where I was born. Stoughton, Wisconsin. Vitruvian Market. Okay. Michael, thank you. And if you learn any more, shoot me an email and we'll put it up on our page and let people know.
Michael, I'll do you one better. I actually had some pork last year, heirloom variety of pork that was raised on heirloom apples. They were fed at the end. So you get the combination of that wonderful flavor that apples can give to pork to finish them off in the season.
Oh, Michael, thank you so much. And you're certainly agreeing with everything he said.
Absolutely.
For sure, Dan. Holly in Ogama has something for us. Hi, Holly.
Yes, I grew up, my mom planted a wine sap, a Macintosh, and a Cortland. The two latter ones have long since deceased, but that stubborn, wonderful old wine sap is still existing since 1954.
All right.
Where in the hell can I find a wine sap to replace it if something should happen? I can't find a wine sap tree to plant.
I can tell you where they are. There are a number of nurseries that still carry the wine sap. It's still a treasured variety. It's not going to get lost. It's around. So you can reach out to me, and I would be happy to set you up with a couple of nurseries that would carry it.
And how will Holly be able to do that?
Well, let's see. I think you can, I'll give you an email address. It's ciderdan@gmail.com.
Ciderdan@gmail.com.
Ciderdan is one word.
Cider Dan is one word.
I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Holly there. Well, what about, could she take the seeds from that apple?
Nope.
I mean, it's an old apple.
The only way to keep it alive is to be able to graft it. You have to vegetatively propagate it to be able to keep it the same. Because the apple is still the wine sap, but the seed that's in it is whatever crossed with it to pollinate it. So it'll be partially wine sap, but partially something else.
So, but Holly could.
She could plant the seed and would
the way that you suggested.
If we graft it, it'll be exactly the same tree.
So she could graft it onto another apple tree?
Yep. onto another apple tree, or we could start with a new apple rootstock. I teach grafting classes. I've taught for over 38 years, and there's different classes that I do around the state, and we can set you up.
Holly, thank you so much for calling. I'm now blanking on the title of the book that I read this past year. Hmm. It was just one that I read for fun, and it's about some apple trees that were planted and sort of the history of a couple 300 years in the existence. And there's a panther on the cover of the book, and I can't remember the title of it.
I can't either. I think I've seen it. I've not read it, but
it was a very interesting because those particular apple trees produced supposedly the most delicious apple in the world. And anyway, in the meantime, you hear the whole story of that particular area of northeast Wisconsin, of northeast U.S.
Yeah.
Over the course of time. Well, somebody's going to call in and there's a panther on the cover.
Well, that's a start.
I can't remember the title of the book. And it's been many months back. So anyway, Peter in Appleton, thanks for calling.
Good afternoon. Could you tell us anything about the story of the Wolf River apple?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked. I dug into the Wolf River apple because the stories that have been around it have all been somewhat right, but a lot wrong. And so I've been able to fix that. What happened is it's been attributed to a man by the name of William Springer. He was told to be a Quebec lumberman. Well, that's not quite right. He actually was from upstate New York, and during the winter, a lot of farmers, when times were slack on the farm, they would work up in the lumber mills or lumber fields. Wisconsin had a lot of that going on, and he worked in Quebec lumbering trees during the winter time. But later on, he decided he wanted to try his fortunes west, and he took his family on a wagon, and they headed across the United States and ended up south end of Lake Erie, where they bought a bushel of apples to eat along the way, and he told his family to save those seeds because we don't know what we're going to find when we get to where we're going. And so he eventually ended up just west of Fremont in a place called Evanswood near the Walla Walla Creek. Anyways, a couple of years later, he ended up squatting on land. They call it preempted. that's the fancy word for it. But he squatted on land at the south end of Partridge Lake, which is a widening of the Wolf River just west of Fremont. And he planted the seeds of these apples and had a nursery going. He was quite the avid nurseryman. But he sold this tree to a gentleman who had a farm on the east side of the Wolf River, on the east bank. The name was always attributed to a guy by the name of Henry Rifflin. And I tried to hunt up Rifflin in all the census records, and I couldn't find anything. Turns out his name was actually Rieflund, a German man. And once I found that, everything kind of fell into place. He died fairly early. There was a notable book put out in 1869 by Charles Downey. He was one of the preeminent pomologists in the country. Anyways, he said that this apple came from the farm of the late Henry Rifflin, and that's where I first got messed up with the names. And so what happened was Rieflund died fairly early. His wife then married a man by the name of Joseph Stiegler, whose name was also misspelled in all the literature. It was, I think, called Steiger. And so we had a time just coming up with the right names. So Rifflin is the man who raised this tree, got it to fruit, the neighbors loved it, and he was the one that named it. Not Springer.
There you go. Peter, you got what you needed to know there. Thank you so much for calling. Oh, man, we're having some fun talking about heirloom apples today with our guest, Dan Bussey. He's the author of a 7-volume book, The Illustrated History of Apples in the United States and Canada. Took him a long time to write and put this together. And how many pages have we got here? 3,000 or something?
Yeah, about 3,000. Yeah,
About 3,000 pages in this 7-volume. You can join in. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Email to talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on WPR News. Great to have you along on WPR News for Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here. Monday, by the way, I want to just mention our physical therapy experts are going to be back to answer your physical therapy questions from 11 to 12:30. And then at 12:30, we'll talk with a therapist about relationships and intimacy. That's on Monday's program. Right now, we're taking a look at heirloom apples with Dan Bussey. It's great to have him with us. And you can join in, 800-642-1234, email to talk at WPR.org. And the name of that tortilla company that produces the tortillas with the heirloom corn is La Cosecha, C-O-S-E-C-H-A, La Cosecha Tortilla Company. And several people have called in to let us know. Steve in Sun Prairie has something for us. Hi, Steve.
Yeah, hi, guys. Hey, I had a uncle, my most senior uncle, actually, graduated with a master's in agronomy from UW in the 30s and moved out to New York. And according to family legend, he developed the Duchess apple out in upstate New York someplace, around Poughkeepsie, I believe.
What was his name?
Yeah, Palmiter.
Palmiter. And the Duchess apple. And when would that have been? The 30s?
He graduated UW, 30s. Probably in the 40s and maybe going into the 50s.
Well, we've got a historian here, Steve, so let's see what Dan's got to say.
Duchess is actually a very old apple. It came from Germans that had moved into Russia, and it was brought into, I think, back into England, and then got here about 1835. So it's one of the really old-timers that's got kind of a dual history, both Germany and Russia. There are Duchess seedlings, which your uncle may have contributed to, so I can't... There isn't one just Duchess. There are seedlings and sports and different things, and he may have developed something like that. But the true Duchess apple, the Duchess of Oldenburg, as the full name is an apple that's been around a lot longer than all of us here.
Okay. Steve, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Mark in Madison, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Mark.
Hello. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
My question is, I was born in Wisconsin, but grew up in Leominster, Massachusetts. And local lore was that Jonathan Chapman, or Johnny Appleseed, came from Leominster, Massachusetts.
Yep.
I'm wondering, what do we know of him, and what types of apples would he have been sharing?
That's a wonderful thing. There are more books written about John Chapman than almost anybody I know, even Trump, I think, at this point. He was a very interesting character. I love reading about him. He is one of those iconic American figures. I know Disney has sort of made a version of him that I think it's not quite true to form, but you know, gave us an idea of what kind of a person he was. He was a Swedenborgian. That was the religious sect that he sort of followed. He did not believe in grafting apples. That was abhorrent to him. The only thing he would do was collect apple seeds from the cider mills in New England, and he would travel up and down the Ohio River, and he would start nurseries using these apple seeds. He sometimes bought the land, sometimes he didn't. But that's how people moved in those days, is upriver. And so he set up nurseries. And the rule was at the time, if you were going to homestead, you had to plant apple trees. There were speculators buying land that would buy it and then mark it up and sell it to somebody else that make a big profit on it. Well, they didn't like that. The government didn't care for that. So they said, as long as you're planting fruit trees, that says you got to take care of them. You got to be there to do that. So he set up nurseries, sell to these people that were moving upstream. And by the time he died, he was one of the richest landowners in the Ohio River Valley. I think he got as far as Fort Wayne, I think, where he passed away. But he's an amazing figure, very true to his form. The Native Americans didn't quite know what to make of him, so they kind of left him alone. Mm-hmm. And he would warn settlers in case there was possibly an attack or something coming. So he was a friend of both the Native Americans and to the early settlers that traveled through.
And a lot of the apples One piece of history that may or may not be true was that the farmers often used the apples for like a hard cider.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Sometimes the water wasn't actually safe to drink. So the cider was a beverage that everybody had. I mean, kids had a glass of cider before they went to school or worked on the farm. Politicians would have a glass of cider before they went to work, and I think a few of them now could probably use a glass of cider before they started their day. But cider was the national beverage, and it was around. But at that time, it was around probably 4 or 5% alcohol, not particularly strong. So it was a pleasant beverage, really easy to make. They would make barrels per person capita, I think, in Massachusetts for drinking. I'm trying to remember some numbers to that. But, yeah, cider was the beverage.
Tim in Hollandale. Hello, what's on your mind?
Hi. As a kid, I used to go out to Prairie du Chien, where our family was from, out by Ferryville. And we used to get this apple called Talman Sweets. And I've been able to find it once a while back at the market up on the square. But I cannot find, I actually want to get a couple of trees.
Yeah.
But I can't find the apples anywhere.
Yeah, they're around. I have Talman Sweet in my collection. Seed Savers has it in theirs when I worked there for 6 years. And so it's one of the classic Wisconsin sweet apples that it was around. I bet there's a lot of wild trees still existing in Wisconsin yet. But it's available in nurseries. It's not the easiest to find, but it's out there. I can help you find those if you want.
And Seed Savers has them?
Yeah, it was in their collection.
Decorah, Iowa.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, there you go, Tim. Thank you very much for calling. Carl in Eau Claire, it's your turn. Hi, Carl.
Hi, I'm curious if your guest, Larry, has got any familiarity with a variety called Rosé. My father-in-law used to grow apples in his backyard in Madison, and his parents were from the Soldiers Grove area, which is pretty famous for a lot of small orchards in that region of Wisconsin, and there are a lot of heirloom varieties there. And he knew of some rosé trees there that had been cut down. He gathered some branches and then grafted them onto his trees in Madison. But he indicated that that might be the last of the rosé, and I just wondered if your guest has any knowledge of that variety. Thank you.
Actually, depending on how you pronounce it, it could be looks like rose or rosé. I think it was a Duchess seedling that was sold by the Mount Zion Nursery in West Salem in La Crosse County. It was known in the late 1880s. It was a variety out there. It's not one that I know particularly well, and if it is the true rosé variety, it's great because it's a lost variety as far as I know. It would be nice to rediscover that one again.
Yeah, there you go, Carl. So is that tree still in existence, or Carl?
The tree that he grafted those onto has been cut down. He sold his home, and the new owners cut down the tree. So yep. That might be the end of the line for that one.
It may be.
Oh, sorry to hear that. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Let's go to Ann in Duluth, Minnesota. Hello, Ann.
Hi. My dad used to grow what I think is an heirloom apple called Fireside.
Yep.
Okay. And he died about 30 years ago. They were so good. And I have only found them twice since, and neither time they were not very good at all. They didn't even remind me of the Firesides that he grew. Do you know of any orchards that are specializing in heirloom apples? Now, I live in Duluth, so within, you know, like a day's drive or a few hours drive where I might be able to find them again.
I see Fireside apples here and there. One apple you might find, it's sort of a variant of it, is called a Connell Red. It came from Dunn County, and it's a red sport of the Fireside. It has the Fireside flavor, but it has an improved color. So it's technically a Fireside, and you might be able to find Connell Reds around in western Wisconsin because it's a very popular apple. It has been for a long time. So that might be one source. I know of a couple of Fireside trees in Decorah, Iowa. I pass by them every day, practically. And so it's an apple that's around, but it's a good one. It's one of the early ones that I first had, I think, when I was first getting into apples, was Fireside. Really, a really tasty apple. Very nice.
Anne, does that help?
Yes, thank you. Maybe I'll have to go to Decorah, right?
There you go.
I can tell you right where the
probably,
trees are.
If you follow along the Mississippi River there, you're probably going to find an orchard or two that has the fireside before you get to Decorah.
Yeah. I know of some, I'm going to give a shout out to a couple of orchards that I know that have heirloom varieties. I'm going to say John Kring and his wife from Suamico have Maple Valley Orchard Nurseries. That's great. Bill Stone from Brightonwood Orchards in Burlington has a lot of heirloom varieties. And Weston's Orchard in New Berlin also has a lot of heirloom varieties. And I bet you they've got fireside as well. So there's a couple really good people that are hanging on to these old, old varieties. And I know there are more out there, and I apologize for anyone I've missed, but that's the fun of it.
Oh, that's the fun of it. Ann, thank you so much. I want to go back to that book that I mentioned with the panther on the cover, and it was the kind of the history of this apple orchard sort of over a couple hundred year period, and Jeff Robbins found the title. The author's Daniel Mason, and the title of the book is North Woods, a novel. It's got a big panther on the cover, and Daniel was the finalist for the Pulitzer Prize.
Wow.
It was really a fascinating novel, North Woods. So there you go. Dot in Manitowoc. Hi, thank you for calling.
Good afternoon. Do all apple trees have to be sprayed because of the, the disease or the worms?
No. In the short answer, what there is if you have habitat for beneficial insects, they will prey on a lot of the apples, pests that are out there. It's not perfect. If you don't over-fertilize your trees, that will help because there are different diseases that strike when a tree is very vigorous, like fire blight is a really nasty pest. Oh, I should say it's a virus disease, and it overnight can absolutely kill your tree. But I've grown apples organically for the last number of years, and I have more good apples than I have ones with spots or specks or whatever. There are just things that you get used to, like sooty blotch and fly speck, which is sort of a little fungus that's on the skin. It doesn't affect the flavor or the taste or anything, but it cosmetically doesn't look bright and shiny like you would normally see apples, but it doesn't affect the flavor whatsoever.
No. And you brought me a couple of apples here. What did you bring me? I'm just dying to crunch into one, but
this is one of the rarest varieties in Wisconsin. It came from Greenfield Township, just west of Sauk City, Baraboo area. It's called a Dockham Russet. I was able to find it in the Badger Preserve. That's between Baraboo and Sauk City. It's land that is co-owned by Dairy Forage Research Center with the USDA and the Wisconsin DNR and then the Ho-Chunk Tribe. We found a tree kindly through the help of the Ho-Chunk people that let us look through the property because we were looking for old apple trees on this preserve because of all the farmers that got chased off back in 1941 when they were going to build an army or an ammunition plant. And so the U.S. Army took over about 10,000 acres of land initially, and they only ended up using about 3,000. They took all the buildings down, but they left a lot of the remnant orchards still in the area. So my friend Kurt Miney and Rob Nury and I have been discovering apples there for the last 10 years or so. And this is one apple that I've been able to identify. And it is a wonderful apple. It's a red russeted apple. Each year it changes a little bit. Really fine flesh, very nice flavor. But there is only one bearing tree that I know of in this country. And it's there in Sauk County.
And what's it called again?
Dockham Russet. D-O-C-K-H-A-M. It's named after the Dockham family that came from New Hampshire and settled in Greenfield Township.
Wow. Wow. Thank you very much. I can't wait to dig into it. But I don't know if I could keep talking while I was. Brandon in Fitchburg, your turn. Hi, Brandon.
Hi. I have, as a kid, there was an apple orchard nearby that had sweet 16s. And recently, I was walking through an a nursery, and they had a Sweet 16. I've got it for a couple of years, but it's not doing so well. I'm wondering, one, is it an heirloom? And two, what are things that I can do to help improve it?
It's a semi-heirloom. It's been around not that long, so, but it actually is one of the parents of Honeycrisp. So it's been around for quite a number of years. Keepsake is the other parent of Honeycrisp, but Sweet 16 is a really nice apple developed in Minnesota. And it's a nice apple.
Yeah, there you go, Brandon. Thank you so much. As long as we're talking about Honeycrisp reminded me. Now, I think those were developed in Minnesota.
Yep, at the university there.
Mm-hmm. And the apples from there, the Honeycrisp from there taste a lot better than the Honeycrisp from other areas. And I there's something to this, I think, isn't it?
Terroir makes a lot of difference. The type of root system that you grow your trees on can influence the taste of the apple. You know, the modern trend, of course, is to have these fruiting walls with very shallow dwarf trees. And those dwarf trees don't have tap roots that much that really can access the minerals deep in the soil. And that's what the older trees can do compared to the newer ones. So that's some of it. But also, if your trees are irrigated a lot, if you have an orchard that irrigates their trees a lot, and that happens, and you get dry years like last year, and you have to, you get a really wet year like it is this year, the flavors are actually much more muted than on a dry year. They've a case in point in California, they intentionally dry out the grapevines later in the season to improve the sugar content and reduce as much just water that's in the grapes themselves, and it improves the flavor and the quality of the wine. Apples are no different than that. I've had irrigated Honeycrisp that to me are just a shadow of what they should be, whereas a naturally grown one with, you know, if it's a decent year and you don't have to irrigate, tastes so much better.
Yeah.
It does make a difference.
It does indeed. Scott in Windsor, your turn. Hi, Scott. Scott, are you there? Oh, I guess we lost Scott. His question had to do with whether or not you use genetic information to sort your apples out.
That's a process I'm working on. I'm working with a group from Washington State University and Fort Collins, the USDA station. And the man who discovered the true parents of the Honeycrisp, that was Nicholas Howard. He's actually from Dodgeville. And he's working overseas in Germany now. And he's put together a baseline of a lot of the heirloom varieties. And we're constantly expanding that. So when someone has a sample of an apple they want to try, they'll send us a leaf, a young leaf that's just come out. Mm-hmm. And we can determine if it's something unique or what its parents are, or if it matches what we have in our database, we can put a name to it. It's a constant ongoing process, but it's fascinating that DNA is starting to, we're finding out a lots of interesting things. There's an apple that I discovered in Decorah, Iowa called a Yankee apple, Y-A-H-N-K-E. It came from Winona, Minnesota. There was a man by the name of Frank Yankee. It was the biggest apple tree I'd ever seen. It was at least 4 foot in diameter. And I thought this was an amazing apple. I saved it, and years later it was bulldozed down. But turns out it was the old Vermont variety called Bethel, which was planted in the upper Midwest. So DNA is making us honest again, I guess, as far as the people renamed apples, or you had an apple you lost the tag to, and what do you call it? So you give it a name. So this is going to simplify a lot of things.
Josh in Baraboo emailed that Stony Ridge Fruit Farm near Loganville has over 100 varieties.
Excellent.
Including Bloody Plowman. Yeah, so Josh says, very interesting if you're into apples there. They are only open weekends, and he believes he does custom grafting as well. So Stony Ridge Fruit Farm near Loganville, and they have the Bloody Plowman.
Yep, it's an old English variety. There's a long story that goes with that, and it's obviously not very good. But it is, it's one of those iconic English varieties, which I love.
Oh, Lisa emailed that she has a geriatric apple tree dying of old age. It seems like the taste of the apples has changed in the last 2 years. Is this a result of the tree's impending doom or the weather conditions for the past two seasons?
I would say it's more weather conditions than anything else. Most trees, even if a tree looks like it's really on its last legs, it maybe has taken 40 years to get to that point, but it may be around for another 40 years. But if you're concerned about it, let me know, and we might be able to graft it for you and keep it going. And the genetics will be the same. It will be the same tree again.
But, oh, so you could do that.
Oh, yes, we can do that. A lot of things we can do is to do a little bit of pruning on the tree to invigorate it. You can take a tree that looks like it's about half dead, and by getting rid of the dead wood and cutting off some of the upright sprouts and encouraging the outer branches to grow, that's where you produce fruit buds, and your tree all of a sudden can kind of come back to life. It's not always perfect. You never cut more than a third of the tree off at any one time. But generally, if we can get a little cutting of it, we can keep that tree alive.
Mm. Do you have a website?
No, I wish I need to. I need to at this point. I've been told I need to have a website, so I guess it's one of those things. I'm sort of a Luddite, and I'll get around to it at some point.
But in the meantime, you do have an email address if she wants to get a hold of you.
Absolutely, and I'm always happy to go talk apples with people wherever they are.
And it's Cider Dan?
Yep, one word, Cider Dan, CIDERDAN, @gmail.com.
@gmail.com, there you go. And I tell you what, here we go. A reminder that we're talking today with Dan Bussey, an expert on heirloom apples and the author of the 7-volume, The Illustrated History of Apples in the United States and Canada. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on WPR News. Taking a look at heirloom apples on the program today with our guest, an expert for sure, Dan Bussey. His 7-volume book, The Illustrated History of Apples in the U.S. and Canada. Quick reminder, next week on Garden Talk, Melinda Myers will be back to talk about getting your garden ready for winter, so I hope you can join us for that. In the meantime, questions about apples, join in at 800-642-1234. Email to talk at WPR.org. John Bergman emailed us from the Stony Ridge Fruit Farm near Loganville, and John says he does have Fireside and Tolman Sweet at the Stony Ridge Fruit Farm near Loganville. So there you go. Suzanne emailed to ask if there's a plan to graft from the Dockham Russet.
Oh, yes. We've been working on that for a couple of years now, so we've got a lot of little trees started, and it's not going to get lost. I have it in my collection down at the Silverwood County Park, which is just southeast of Madison and the far southeast part of Dane County near Edgerton. I have a collection of about 600 varieties there, and we're going to be planting the trees. I've got them in the nursery, and we're going to be planting them out. And so it's a community orchard, and you can come and pick apples. It's not ready yet, so don't come on out. But it's a wonderful place. It's a lovely park. That it was from land donated by a school teacher by the name of Irene Silverwood. It's a beautiful place, and a lot of things are happening there, so it's going to be fun. But the orchard's coming along. It'll be about 12 acres, and you can sample any of those 600 varieties when they come into fruit. And if you like them, we can graft a tree for you or help you out. I'm going to start teaching classes on cider making and apple pie baking and all that good stuff. So we're going to have some fun.
That sounds absolutely great. You really do have to get a website.
Yeah, I do.
For sure.
Yes.
And you mentioned 600 varieties, and you were telling me before the show that you've got a book. You'll be coming out with a book on Wisconsin apples.
Yeah. I put one together called The Apples of Wisconsin, an exploration of the apples that call Wisconsin home. I've been able to track 623 varieties of apples that originated in Wisconsin. I mean, most people probably know of but 3 or 4 maybe, but that many originated in the state. And I have a history of the people that introduced them and grew them, and it's been a lot of fun putting this together.
Oh, man. So, when you get that book ready to sell, you got to come back.
Okay.
And be on the show. Or is it a long way off?
Oh, I hope it's going to be pretty soon. That it's pretty much done, but I won't put a panther on the cover.
No, don't do that. Oh, man. Tony in Highland, your turn. Hi, Tony.
Hi there. My wife and I, one of our favorite apples is called an ambrosia. I'm not sure if it's an heirloom or not, but we were visiting one of the orchards in the Kickapoo Valley and asked them about it, and they said that it is a Canadian apple and that there is some sort of Canadian mafia or something that won't allow you to buy the tree to grow here in the United States. Is there actually something like that?
I've heard of ambrosia. It's around. I don't think it's one of those. You know, there are plant patent rights, and that is probably the biggest thing that probably keeps a lot of people from growing some of the newer varieties is because of that. I swear I know people that are growing the ambrosia. It's a pretty good apple. But yeah, they're trying to control the market for them, so they only allow so many people to grow them, and you have to pay for the privilege of being able to do that. We call those country club apples. And it's kind of a bane in life, but you know, I understand it's about marketing. I was a one-time president of the Wisconsin Apple Growers Association, and really it's about marketing and making things available to people, but you know, trying to we have to make a living doing this, so it's part of the process.
So it's not really a mafia.
No, not really.
Okay,
it only seems that way, I guess, if you can't get it.
Nancy in Washburn, your turn. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. I'm originally from New York State near the Finger Lakes, and my folks always used to talk about Northern Spies. I haven't seen that out here, and I was wondering if it is available.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Northern Spy is a wonderful apple. The only kicker about Northern Spy is it takes a long time for it to bear. Mm. On a semi-dwarf rootstock, it takes 10 years to get your first apples. So it isn't planted as much as it used to be. I mean, it's the classic New England pie apple, and it's a wonderful apple. I have a tree of it. It took me 10 years to get one apple finally, and then after that, it bore a lot. But it's a great apple. They have it at the Seed Savers Exchange, and it's a wonderful tree. It's a great apple, and I wish more people planted it. But if you're trying to make a living off of this, it takes a while before you get your first paycheck.
There you go. Well, pies, do certain types of apples make better apple pie is an email question.
Oh, gosh. Northern Spy is a classic. A lot of people use Golden Delicious, of course. My mother was a home ec teacher, and she taught her sons to bake, considering our dubious employment or marital prospects. At least we wouldn't starve. So I don't make a pie unless I have probably about three varieties. Now, if you don't know what to do with an apple, hold it in your hand. Does it feel heavy for its size, like a cue ball, or is it light like a puffball mushroom? The ones that are denser and heavier tend to stay firm in a slice. The ones that are softer tend to cook down. So I like to mix the firm slices with ones that make a sauce around them. And then if I can get it, a red fleshed apple for color. And then you've got like the perfect pie. Now, ambrosia is an interesting apple that came out of the 1980s, and it was from British Columbia, and it was assigned to a particular nursery. So I think that's probably the reason that you're not seeing it around. It's been tested in Iowa and different places in the 40s, but a different one. But it's around. It's been protected. That's why you're not able to find it very awesome. So I just wanted to backtrack and mention that. I happened to look it up here in my little book.
Sarah in Rosendale has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. I'm looking for recommendations, really, for a good softer meat apple, I guess I should say. You can find an apple that is kind of grainy when you eat it, and that's not necessarily something that's loved by the family.
Yeah, or I missed part of that, I think.
So. Yeah, can you repeat that first part? I missed it, too.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm just looking for recommendations for a softer meat of an apple.
Okay.
I guess. Not something that's so grainy for the meat part of it.
Okay. Yeah, that's kind of an issue. Sometimes if they're softer, they typically have maybe a little coarser grain to them. Yeah, like yellow transparents, they're really a soft apple. Macintosh are probably one of the softer ones, and it's fairly fine grain, and they're just in season right now. So just good old Macintosh might be a possibility.
Yeah. There you go, Sarah. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. Roxy emailed that there are a couple of orchards in the Chippewa Falls area that have Connell Reds.
Yeah.
For the lady who called from Duluth.
Yeah, that's where you'd find them. And it would be your fireside taste, but with a little brighter red coloring.
So Chippewa Falls is fairly close for her, for the lady who called earlier.
Yeah.
Brad emailed that he lives on a portion of an old orchard, excuse me, in Door County, about 15 plus trees, variety of varieties. He hasn't really done anything with them as far as treatment. Is there a way to bring back to production or to check if it's worthwhile to bring these trees back?
Yeah, I think it doesn't take that much. You just need to look at the tree. And when it's time to prune, it's look at getting rid of all the deadwood that's there and getting rid of a lot of the vigorous upright sprouts, because that'll encourage side branching, which is where your fruit is going to come from. And you'll be surprised how these trees can sort of just all of a sudden seem rejuvenated. It takes a couple of years, about 3 years, to get that to happen. But a little bit of work that you put into it will pay for itself.
Joe wonders, what apples make the best apple cider?
There are so many different kinds. I got into sort of the trap that I was going to grow all the old standard European cider varieties for making hard cider. And some of them work pretty well. But a lot of them are very touchy. They ripen pretty early and they drop. I have been scrounging apples in the wilds of southeast Minnesota, and we have found more wonderful cider apples just from a cider apple typically is a smaller apple because you have a larger skin to pulp ratio, and the tannins, which give your cider character and mouthfeel, are in that skin, in those tannins. So by having a smaller apple with a lot of skin, you get that, you can get more tannin extraction. But mix as many different kinds as you can find. If you can find russet apples, they by themselves have probably some of the best flavors possible. Mix as many different kinds as you can, because what one lacks, another one will pick up. But look for some of the smaller ones that are kind of nasty to eat. Yeah, that's going to give your cider a little bit of zing, and that's a good thing.
And then what do? You got all these apples.
Well, if you can find a way to get them juiced, that's wonderful. And cider is one, hard cider, I should say, is one of the easiest things to make. It requires just clean containers, good jug, and if you can find some type of cider yeast, there are different kinds. You can use British ale yeast. You can use some of the special cider yeast. And you put a fermentation lock, of course, to keep the air out and let it bubble and froth. It gets pretty crazy the first couple of days, and then it settles down to a lot of little bubbling. And when the bubbling kind of is done, you can put a little priming sugar in your bottle, use a beer bottle. You can't use a wine bottle because they can't take any pressure. But if you have like a champagne bottle or a beer bottle, they can handle so many bars of pressure, and you can bottle it and then enjoy it all winter long. It's simple. It's really simple. The more you know how to make it, the harder it is.
Oh, man. This has been a lot of fun, Dan.
Oh, me too. It has. It's a treasure.
Well, I definitely want you back. And when that book comes out on Wisconsin apples, be the perfect time. So get that book out quick.
Yeah. Okay.
And thank you for the apples, and thank you so much for being with us today.
It's been a pleasure to be here.
Oh, man. Dan Bussey, his book, well, he's got the 7-volume history, the illustrated history of apples in the United States and Canada. An amazing collection and book, and I have really enjoyed looking at least one of the volumes. There are a lot of volumes, 7 of them. Thanks to him, and thanks to you for listening in. And stay with us. Lots more in store here. Remember, we've got a great team effort here with Clara Neipert and Joel Patnott, our producers, technical directors, Lee Rayburn and Jeff Robbins. Of course, our boss and executive producer is Jill Nadeau. I'm Larry Mueller. Thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on WPR News.
Makes you feel so fine, looking out across the orchard in the bright sunshine. Hey ho, it makes you feel so free, standing in the top of an apple tree.